closed session to, A, we received some confidential official correspondence, and B, non-reelection of a probationary certified employee. The board is reporting out on the action taken in closed session by a vote of 5-0 with one abstention. The board approved confidential resolution number 11-11-12, non-reelection of probationary certificated employee number 19620. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay, seeing that we have a consensus on the order of business, we're going to try to get through this because we have a grandpa in waiting up here, and we want to make sure that he gets all the board business done before he rushes across the street to be there for the birth of his grandchild. Oh, yay. Yay for Mr. Quisenberry. So let's move on to the minutes. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes of February 21st?
I would so move.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Any discussion from the public? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Carries 6-0. Oh, 5-0 with one abstention. The board did receive correspondence from Mrs. Joyce Hunter, the principal at Sensheimer School, and it was regarding her planned retirement effective June 27, 2012. And I just would like to thank Mrs. Hunter for the kind letter that she wrote. And we accept this letter of resignation. Well, we don't, but we would like to acknowledge Mrs. Hunter and on behalf of the board, thank her for her service to the district. Move on to public comment. Is there, Mr. Buckman, did we receive any notes for public? Is there anybody that would like to address the board on any item at this time? And seeing nobody, I'll close public comment. We'll go on to presentations. We have three this evening, and the first, we'll start with Tessa Reeves, our representative from San Luis Obispo High School. Take it away, Tessa.
Okay, thank you. I'm Tessa Reeves, and I'm a junior at San Luis Obispo High School, and I'm the student congress chair. 2 weeks ago, we had our blood drive, and it was a great turnout. A lot of people came out and donated and saved lives, which is really cool. Last week, on Tuesday, we had the 8th grade orientation tours where we, a bunch of members from ASB and the peer helper group, toured about 10 students each around the campus, and that was really fun to see their reactions to high school and everything. We also had our band and choir assembly last Friday, and we have our finals this week, so everyone's kind of stressing out right now, but we're excited for the new trimester. Also, tomorrow we are having a Dave Melton Memorial Math Scholarship fundraiser at California Pizza Kitchen from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. And 20% of the proceeds go to the scholarship fund. So I encourage you all to go eat at California Pizza Kitchen tomorrow for that. Also, prom is coming up, and we are announcing the theme next Friday at our spring sports rally. And three members of our FFA chapter have been slated for regional officer positions, so that's pretty exciting. And also, at the end of the month, the WASC committee is coming, so we are giving them tours around campus, and I'm one of the people that is giving tours, and so we have to kind of, like, be like really nice and like try and like, I mean, not that we would be mean, but we have to like try and, I don't know, make us our school look really good. And they're finishing the solar panels on the parking lot right now, so that's pretty exciting, and people are starting to park under them, so it's going well. Thank you.
Great, Tessa, thank you so much, and good luck with your finals. You know, are you starting to think about college? For I know it's a year and a half out. Not quite yet. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, you know what? I think you're going to be successful with whatever you do, and I know you're going to represent San Luis Obispo High School in a really positive way too. And thank you for everything. Let's move on to the Teach Grant Awards. Terry Main, would you like to come up and do the introduction? This is so exciting for us.
Good evening. Pleased to be here again presenting the Teach Foundation Spring 2012 Grant Awards. This particular cycle, we are awarding $7,218.43 as part of our efforts to support classroom projects and enrichment for students in the San Luis.
And her newest book, which won an award, is called Running Dream. And it's actually a young adult, but sixth graders could totally read it. I just finished it. It's awesome. So she's going to be coming to our Thursday night in April 26th, a family read aloud night. And she's going to talk about, well, she's going to talk about how Flip became a movie and her new book, Running Dream. And she's going to be doing some book signing, and so excited about that. And the next morning, she's going to come back and talk about just the writing process. So every time we brought an author that I've seen, it's just made a huge impact on the kids. The books are just flying off the shelves for almost like a whole year after an author comes. And right now, Los Osos Public Library, people are telling me that all the Wendell and Van Draenen books are out. So it's pretty exciting. And so you are all invited to come. Either event, too. So.
You said that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to repeat the date.
April 26th is in the library at Baywood will be the Family Read Aloud Night, and that will be the book signing, too. And then the next morning at 9:30 on Friday morning, April 27th, she's going to do an assembly just talking about the writing process for second through sixth graders.
So. What time did you say it was on the 26th?
6:30 p.m. in the school library.
Okay.
I just want to thank the Teach Foundation. We're very grateful. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Dinelli, and I'm a teacher on special assignment at Baywood. And I would like to thank the Teach Foundation on behalf of our students, our families, and our staff. The grant we received is to invite the California Math Council for our second annual math festival at Baywood. The math festival is a full-day event. All of our 450 students, kindergarten through sixth grade, will have an opportunity to participate in standards-based hands-on math. After school, there's a professional learning component for teachers where they will learn how to take the math activities into the classroom to further conceptual development with math learning. And then in the evening, we'll invite all of our families back with our students and their siblings to do math side by side together with our teachers as well as our families. So we're really excited to have this. Our topic is number sense this year, and I'd like to also extend an invitation to each of you. It's Tuesday, March 20th during the school day, 8:15 to 2:30. And after school, the professional learning component is 3 to 4:30, and then our family night is 6:30 to 7:30. So please join us for any or all of that that you can. And thank you very much to the Teach Foundation.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer.
Hello, my name is Erin Shimke, and I teach at C.L. Smith Elementary School, P.E. We have big class sizes, and I'm new this year at C.L. Smith Elementary. We needed some new equipment for P.E. to make exercise more fun and exciting and more enjoyable for them to come out and do P.E. So the more exciting it is, the more fun they want to have and the more they want to participate. So we are going to be able to purchase scooters for the gym that won't mar up the floors, some special jumping bands that they can jump over in stations, some animal-shaped bean bags, which will be very fun for the K-3 students in stations as well, and some relay batons for track and field. So we really appreciate the new fun equipment that we're going to be getting for PE students to make learning and physical education more fun. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much.
Hi. Hi, I'm Maria Slavin, Del Mar, fifth grade. It's kind of fun to be here talking about the Teach Foundation as a teacher. And I want to thank the board for their continued work at keeping that going. And it's really exciting to see the endowment grow and grow. We are doing an interactive playground where kids will be able to go out and do math in a very conceptual, kinesthetic way. We are turning our PE lines into line segments, so like halves, thirds, eighths. We're going to be doing a giant number line, positive and negative numbers, all the way across the entire playground. We're going to take our four squares and turn them into coordinate grids. So it's the X and Y axes with the positive and negative numbers so they can go out there and plot it. The hopscotch we're going to turn into different types of equations. So we're going to throw beanbags that are positive and negative numbers or multiplication and division so that we can do random types of order of operations things there for a long time to come.
And thank you, Maria. And just Maria was on the board of the Teach Foundation for quite a while, and thanks for your service on that, too.
Hi, I'm Scott Scaldi, and I'm at Laguna. And I'm here on behalf of the AVID programs of both Laguna and Los Osos Middle School. We're going to take a little trip on Friday, courtesy of the Teach Grant, and we're going to head out with 50 students and myself and three other teachers, and we're going to head in a charter bus up to Cal State Monterey Bay. We're going to take a little tour there, courtesy of a student who graduated last year from Morro Bay High School, and then we're going to head up to UC Santa Cruz, and young Tyler Hoyt, who's a junior there and a former student of Morro Bay, is going to give us a tour, and we're going to have lunch. Our students are going to get the opportunity to have an all-you-can-eat lunch on the campus, the one where they can go and get as much frozen yogurt as they want. And then after that, we're going to head over to Stanford and hang out with Mr. Kirby, who went to Morro Bay High School. And I'm sorry to San Luis High. There's another young man from San Luis High who's also a sophomore on that campus, and he's going to help us out as well. The whole idea is to give our kids in AVID, which are typically low socioeconomic, and pretty much always kids would be the first in their family to go to college, an opportunity to kind of see what this dream is all about, to kind of drive by and check out some of these campuses, see what they look like, and have a good time. And it's really neat that we'll do it with both of our campuses, our middle school campuses. They'll get to see some other kids, meet some friends, and have a good time. So we're really excited, and we're grateful to the Teach Foundation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Scott. And I just want to comment, I think it's great that some of our former students are going to be guiding your AVID students through the different campuses. I know Tyler Hoyt, and he's just a great kid, and I'm so glad that we're keeping him involved.
It's fun to have that connection to our community.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Jana Mooney, and I'm a math teacher at Laguna Middle School. I was lucky enough to move to the Central Coast a year and a half ago and be hired at Laguna part-time this year, temporary employee. And I teach a group of at-risk students who struggle with math and usually do not like math at all, and it's everything that I can do to motivate and encourage them. So I would like to thank the Teach Grant for purchasing a interactive mobile whiteboard for me, a Mobi, so that I can use it in my classroom for many things, from motivation and encouragement and building on the curriculum and classroom management tool and technology tool for some of these children who have little or no access to technology at home, and to be able to use some of the Holt curriculum and some of the new curriculum that I'm being trained in, like Do the Math by Marilyn Burns, and being able to incorporate those things into my classroom. Every exciting tool that we get to help these kids is just one more way to encourage them to want to do great in math. So thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be in San Luis.
Thank you, Jana.
Yeah, Mark. And I want to personally thank Jana for sharing her room for the past 2 years with me in the after-school program, even though we messed up her whiteboard.
Hello, my name is Amy Burris, and I'm at Los Osos Middle School, and I'm a mathematics teacher. And I'm lucky to already have a Mobi. And what I've asked for from the Teach Foundation, I'm so thankful, is an e-instruction interactive response pads, the clickers. And the clickers that I have now are great. They're the pads that have A, B, C, D, E, or F. And the new ones are alphanumeric. So instead of giving them four choices and seeing which one's wrong, they can actually click in their actual answer, 17 and 6/10 for their answer. And so it takes it beyond just being able to be a good guesser. and takes them so that they are able to actually see whether or not they know how to work through the problem. And it interacts with the MOBI, the interactive board, by showing me as I'm walking around the classroom immediately which students got it right and which students are struggling and got a wrong answer. So I can immediately go over to a student, not have to wait till I grade their test later, and let them know immediately who needs additional instruction and who doesn't. So it really allows me to differentiate instruction in my classroom immediately. So I'm very pleased to receive this grant from the Teach Foundation, and thank you guys very much.
Great. Thank you, Amy.
Hi, I'm John Wise, and I teach in the ED class over at Morro Bay High School. And I just want to thank the Teach Grant for really taking care of some of the district's most vulnerable students. With the money that we're receiving, we're going to teach our students how to install a drip system in our class garden and build raised gardening beds, and also buy ingredients for our life skills cooking program. Both of which just really, it's amazing how much those activities really benefit them therapeutically, socially, emotionally, academically. And also while I'm up here, I just wanted to thank the district for providing mental health services to our students in our classrooms. It's just really incredibly enhanced our ability to teach and our students' ability to learn.
One of the things that many of my students tell me is they wouldn't be in school if it wasn't for our classes, and this is what they want to do for their life. So giving them another skill that they could do and possibly turn into a career is what I'm really excited about. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Katrina.
Hi, I'm Marlene Mendes, and I teach PE at San Luis Obispo High School. And I would like to thank the Teach Foundation for the many, many years that they've supported all of the students in our district. They've been so supportive, and they've covered so many different departments and different realms of education. And I hope that they will continue with this. We received a grant. Our students have received a grant to have karate at our school, and it is set up to bring in Brian Way, who teaches at the American Karate School, and I think it will be a great way for them to learn some self-defense and also build their confidence and take it with them when they leave the high school and hopefully have it out in our community and have a sense of empowerment and also a sense of confidence that they can take care of themselves and they go to college or they go out and live their lives. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Marlene.
Real quick, there was a couple of teachers that couldn't be with us tonight, so I'll just give you their grants. Nancy Bedrigan at Laguna Middle School requested a grant to take her class to the Slow Art Museum. We also have Don, Rapucci. Okay, well, he's a science teacher at Morro Bay High School, and he asked us for a winterbine kit for his science class. So we issued him a grant for that. We also gave some money to the Ballet Folklorical Program at Laguna Middle School. So all in all, it was a very successful grant cycle, and we look forward to being back in the fall. Are there any questions?
So, Terry, usually, I know in the spring you guys do a big fundraiser. Do you have any thoughts on a fundraiser for this year? Things we can kind of share with people?
We're actually focusing right now on applying for some grants because we do have a pass-through fund. We found that as a great way for us to increase our giving in an immediate fashion, so we're focusing right now on trying to get some grant applications in. We will be doing a fall fundraiser this year. We're anticipating that. So we will be back to tell you about that when we have more details. So thank you very much for your time, and thanks to all the teachers. It's so wonderful to see all the creative things that they're doing. You can see the wide diversity amongst all the grants, and we're just thrilled to be able to support them. So thanks for your time, and thank you to all the teachers for all you do.
Great. And just on behalf of the Board of Trustees, we want to thank you and all of the Teach Foundation folks for the great support that you've given to our schools and to our teachers. So thank you. And to our kids. Let's move on to a math presentation. Dr. Prater.
So,
thank you for the opportunity to provide an update for you. First of all, I'd like to introduce our core group. My name's Rita Delkus, Camp Director of Secondary Learning and Achievement, and part of our core team is here tonight to make this presentation. We have Amy Shields, our Elementary Director for Learning and Achievement, Jill Larson, our pre-K-6 mathematics teacher on special assignment, and Barbara Salitis, our grade 7-12 math TOSA. As well, I'd like to acknowledge that even though we're the core team of people who have been working on the math plan, we haven't done this alone. In fact, Darla Batistic, who's here also, our K-6 assessment TOSA was with us at the very beginning, along with Tina Lucas, who's not here tonight, who is our BITSA TOSA, to help us, as well. Erin Lunds, our secondary assessment TOSA, has jumped right in and supported all of our work. In addition, not here tonight also is Barbara Blonke, who is a math consultant who's been working with us and really helping to inform our work. Okay, so we're going to begin by just giving a quick overview of our work since, shall we try that? Does that work? a brief overview of our work so far since fall of 2009. And selected this Trivial Pursuit board game as we looked at more math data. And we also, we went here and we, in the summertime, based on this initial information, we had some teachers who took a lead and said, well, let's take some of this information that we're learning and how can we apply it to our Algebra 1 curriculum. And so they came up with pacing guides and aligned them to an assessment. Then we came back together as a core group and gathered some math data, and about that time we were developing Initiative 5. We went and we continued our work here. The Common Core came in the fall, and we added those thoughts to our math plan. How does the Common Core fit into what we want to do in math? We went back out to our think tank, and we drafted a plan. We drafted the math plan, and then in the fall, fall, and then finally, after we came up with we revised that math plan again, we came out to the group again and said, okay, here's our revised math plan, please give us some feedback. And this is where we were just a couple of months ago, looking at more math data, sharing some of that with you, and then this past Friday we shared our math plan revision with you, and I think we even have some updated copies for you this evening. So that's the work we've been doing, going back and forth, getting feedback. And what I just talked about, I talked about the 9 essential components of a program. Well, what we did was we reduced those to 5 key areas. And these are the 5 key areas of our math plan. And as you can see, some of this work we've talked about before, our collaborative continuous improvement cycle, fits right with part number 1, how we gather data, how we plan, how we assess our progress. Professional development is a key part. Our instructional program, and it was exciting to hear some of our Teach Grant people tonight talking about what they're doing in math and how they're applying that to the instructional program. Monitoring student achievement is another key part. And then, of course, intervention, and we have the RTI pyramid there to represent that part of our plan.
As Rita mentioned, you have in front of you tonight the most current draft of our 4-year math plan. And as we define this math plan, it was important for us to look from the Partnership for the 21st Century, which is a national organization that advocates helping every child in America to get ready for tomorrow's global economy. To successfully face rigorous higher education coursework, career challenges, and globally competitive workforce, what we've learned is that U.S. schools must align classroom environments with real-world environments by fusing the academic three R's, those subject areas, with the four C's: critical thinking and problem solving, collaboration, communication, and creativity. In mathematics, we are taking the next steps in each of these areas to build that world-class math program. We're going to begin with critical thinking and problem solving, and I want you to listen in to first-year teacher Kelly Kaur as she compares her personal experience growing up as a math student with her recognition now of the urgency to engage students in critical thinking and problem-solving activities in order to develop their conceptual understandings in math.
Solving the equation, but I could do the steps and I could plug and chug, and I loved math because I was getting A's because I could do it. And then I got to high school and I hit this wall where I started getting problems wrong, and I didn't know why, because I was doing what the teacher was saying, but I didn't understand conceptually what was going on. And in today's professional development, I saw so many wonderful ideas for how to teach my students how to think deeply about these concepts and become critical thinkers and become mathematicians so that they're going to be able to solve those problems in their own unique ways.
One of the other C's is collaboration, and this year we've had a really strong focus on collaborating through professional development in pre-K through 12. One important component of collaborating involves working effectively and respectfully in diverse teams.
To work collaboratively, teachers and their students need to exercise flexibility and willingness to be helpful in making necessary compromises to accomplish a common goal.
They also need to share in the responsibility of the collaborative work while being valued for their independent contributions.
As we transition to the Common Core State Standards in mathematics,
my math teachers have been extremely beneficial, and I think I've come away today with knowing what I knew all along is that our students need to have a deep understanding of mathematics to be successful in life, whether they go on to college or whether they go on to work. And part of this is going to be what we need to do as best practices, and that's going to be putting math into English. And they need to be able to explain their thinking and what they've been doing, why it worked. I often, every day in my class, I say, tell me what you did and why. And kids who are ninth graders and don't want to say anything will start to learn how to do that. If you press upon them each day, you're teaching them. You have to teach them a pattern and routine. And I think today was beneficial because we all kind of came away with, gosh, we really do need to get their thoughts out of them, not just some answer on the paper. All these years it's been about the answer, but it really is about the process and student learning.
Creativity is another important element to develop in our mathematicians, and there are four competencies essential for creative expression. The first and most important of these is capturing their new ideas. The second is to present challenges to them through problem solving. The broadening of one's experiences through new and engaging learning is the third essential aspect in developing creativity. And the fourth is to surround ourselves with interesting and diverse people and ideas.
Children develop creativity not when you tell them, but when you show them. We need to nurture these skills in our classrooms by encouraging creative habits. As educators, we need to promote deeper creative thinking in our students and constantly ask them why.
Creativity is at the heart of problem solving, and therefore it is at the heart of mathematics.
We have a fifth C, and that C is change. We are now looking to our instructional leaders, our principals, our math TOSAs, and our teacher leaders to guide our school sites as we dramatically change the way we think about teaching and learning in math in our district.
Veteran principal Joyce Hunter shares her involvement in math professional development for principals that was presented last month, earlier this month, by our consultant Barbara Blanke.
Today was really a profound day looking at mathematics and the journey that we're going to have in classrooms, both teachers and students. I'm excited to come away with today thinking about what I can do as an instructional leader with what we're currently doing in mathematics, knowing that we're going to be doing a lot of change over these next few months and next few years. I think as I leave today and I think about when I go in to do cognitive coaching with teachers, I'm going to be looking at the models that they use with students and providing feedback on that. I'd like to look at the interaction that as they monitor students, how students are engaging in conversation and mathematical reasoning within their conversation. I want to look at how, as a community of learners, we use basic conceptual understanding in that classroom to promote, you know, mathematical reasoning. Those are some of the ways I'm going to go back and look at math lessons differently than I have in the past, and to also provide that structure, support, and guidance for teachers as they begin to implement and as we all move forward in this big change in mathematics. And I'm very excited about what I heard today. It really is revolutionary and earth-shaking.
When we first began our math journey back in 2009, we were looking at ideas for developing simply a math plan. We brainstormed what we wanted San Luis Coastal Unified School District graduating students to look like in math. This is actually a picture of that very first activity that took place by the committee. It was developed by them, and we think it still fits a couple years later. Our math plan has taken this initial vision and is beginning to put it into action. We look forward to sharing future updates on our journey towards developing a powerful math program for all of our students, and we would like to share with you our elementary and secondary exemplar portfolios, which contain some of the preliminary analysis from our common assessments. We'll leave those with you tonight, and we'll open it up to any questions.
Are there any questions from board members?
Yes, Mrs. Shields. So were the secondary instructors involved in this part of the process?
Absolutely. It was a K-12 committee that not only involved teachers, but some principals, also involved members of our community from Cal Poly. Any I'm missing, Rita? I know we had Cal Poly representatives. We had math consultants from a Scholastic company that joined us.
Okay, other questions from board members? Mark?
One of the things that I'd like to ask is
set out for elementary and for secondary. So, yes, we're very connected, and at the same time, we're able to differentiate for the different needs at elementary and secondary.
I think Ellen first and then Marilyn.
Dr. Dalkis-Camp or Mrs. Shields, I don't know, or both. When you had the diagram up early on about the progression from 2009 to 2011, the group that went to Asilomar and got the nine basic concepts, or the nine critical, what were they called, essential components, then those were winnowed down to five. Can you explain a little bit about that process and what the five that you landed on as being the ones that we were going to address in our program, what those are about?
So these are the five right here. And it was Dan Andrus and Terry Elfrink who went to the Asilomar conference and came back with a wonderful framework that was put together by county superintendents.
Okay.
And it was focused on mathematics. And then Darla and Tina went at it for a couple of weeks or months, charting up on our whiteboard the nine areas. And some of them didn't necessarily apply to, as closely within the scope of our work and instructional services. Some things had to do with funding or evaluation of teachers and staff. And so we chose to focus on these five areas that we felt we could develop a plan that would really impact achievement for our students.
Thank you. Would you say that you could take this this plan and apply it to mathematics and apply it equally to English language arts, to science, to STEM, or whatever. I mean, this template would work in any field of study.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was very part concise of the design. And, you know, it's easy to understand where we're headed and what we're doing. I think that's really well done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a question about the collaboration piece. I understand that the elementary, the second grade teachers talk to second grade teachers and eighth grade to eighth grade and maybe middle school teachers to middle school. But is there collaboration across the board? Are high school mathematics teachers talking to pre-K teachers just to understand what is being learned at every level and what the expectations are as the students progress, both in what they should know now, what they should have learned last year, and what the teacher has them this year is preparing them for in coming years? Is there that kind of longitudinal collaboration?
I think it's fair to say that we have the beginning steps of that in place through the ABLES project through Cal Poly, which was a 6th through 12th grade math 3-day workshop that took place last August and then has been monthly follow-up sessions. There's been this communication, sixth grade teachers in the room with high school teachers talking and doing and learning math together. So just the beginning piece. I know for elementary, what we are hoping to get planned in our 4-year plan, what we're hoping to see happen is not only grade level knowledge and understanding of best practices, but also that understanding of what happens before, what happens after. We think it's really important for our preschool teachers, for our TK teachers, to understand what algebra looks like and the pieces that they do in getting kids to sort blocks, how it wheels on up and is part of the thread in getting those kids to be algebra ready. So we've only begun this, but it's certainly in our planning pieces.
The only thing I'd add is that some of the evidence that we're beginning, some of that articulation, is in our common assessments, where K-12 we focused on an algebra strand and the skills that build, and also where it will come out some more is with our implementation of the California Common Core, because of the way they're designed to support that articulation.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question more about the professional development or in-service part. And so you have a cadre of teachers that have been through these summer workshops. How is that going to eventually reach all, let's say, all the math teachers or all the teachers that deal with math?
Well, I think we're addressing this at different levels. So, for example, the guided math pilot and the Academy of Inquiry-Based Learning with Cal Poly, that Summer Institute and follow-up sessions were an opportunity
with all of our grade levels. So it's not a if you can make it, and it's going to take a lot of resources to put that in place. But we want that same high quality for all of our students, no matter which class they walk into.
Thank you very much.
Great, and I just want to thank you all, too. I must tell you that when I got the plan Friday night, I thought, oh, my God, I hope this isn't the PowerPoint we're going to be seeing, because I was prepared for that. But I want to thank you for the engaging and informative presentation. So, appreciate it. Let's move on to Dr. Prater, the status of the state budget. I take it you're pitching in for Mr. Miller tonight.
Am I on? Thank you for having me in place of Russell Miller. I appreciate that. Actually, it might be the norm. But I wish I had a rosier picture for you regarding the budget of the state of the budget in California, what the Legislative Analyst Office is putting out there. In fact, today is that the governor's projections are falling short by the tune of about $600 million. And they're hopeful that when the tax receipts come in April and May, that the picture will change. But as of now, it's looking like revenues are short, according to the projections. I'd like to talk tonight really briefly about the weighted student formula and where the LAO's office, that's where I pay close attention. The legislative analyst's office is providing sort of a summation or a summary, executive summary of where the governor's proposals are going. So what they've basically stated is that they are recommending that districts provide two budgets, if you will. Budget A for if the tax initiative in November passes, and budget B if the tax initiative fails. So that's a fantastic indicator of a quite serious situation facing our state in terms of revenues. And so what that equates to in our case is our categorical fair share impact. We expect that, and we'll build that into our budget to the tune of about $370 per ADA is what they're expecting or what they're recommending through school services. Now, I can share with you some insights that I received today. Long Beach Unified, for example, has developed two of those budgets. Budget A is if it passes, and Budget B is if it doesn't. And I can tell you, Long Beach Unified is one of the finest school districts in the state, and their impact if the budget doesn't pass, their projection is $189 million reduction and a 160-day school year. So this is what other school boards are facing in California. In our case, it's not quite as severe as that. We are in a much better place. And after hearing the math presentation by our instructional team tonight, you can imagine how all this plays out in my mind. The resources that we have been focused on students and achievement and preparing our teachers and our administrators to do what we're set out and to do, which is to educate. And so for me, I'm paying very close attention as a community-funded school district and paying very close attention to the governor's finance reform effort called weighted student formula. And I will continue to bring this to you. And the LAO's office is actually today in support of that effort, which is not necessarily good news for us. And what they stated was that the ideal circumstance for a weighted student formula approach is a no harm clause. And the no harm clause suggests that the monies that are generated for schools will focus as a base amount for every child and then an additional amount for those students that we know are most at risk. Students in poverty, English language learners are two examples of that. Districts that have high percentages of students that meet that criteria would receive additional funding. Now, this weighted student formula has a new no harm clause built in to 12-13. And then over the next 5 to 7 years, it graduates out of that. And to the tune, it basically lays out as a percentage each year the formula would be built in. So what that means for San Luis Coastal, being a community-funded school district, is it wouldn't be details within the weighted student formula will include over time a no-harm clause, because there will be a number of school districts in California that will be harmed by this effort. So to try and do a good thing, which we know is important, which is providing more funding for at-risk students, you're harming other students. So I kind of see this as a Robin Hood policy, if you will. And I struggle to see how it helps all students in California. So those are the two things I'm looking at, weighted student formula and how that plays out in the LAO's office. And I'm looking at the tax initiatives that are possibly going to reach the November ballot. So those are the two things we'll be looking at in the next several months as we do our budget development process. Are there any questions? Okay. Thank you.
I think, Mr. Robinette, you're up for open enrollment protocols.
Thank you, and I've actually reported on open enrollment the past couple of board meetings. I don't have a lot new to add other than to just kind of remind the board that we're being very intentional about what we're doing with open enrollment. That is, students choosing to go to another school within our district, which is a value of our school district and one that we're certainly upholding, but we're trying to be more intentional about that, especially as it has impacts on school size, on combination classes, and especially at the kindergarten level, the impacts it could have over years of schools getting disparate numbers. So this is open enrollment month. We're doing kindergarten registration this month. We're actually also having our challenges and questions with transitional kindergarten as that's rolling in with the November birth date. But I also wanted to point out to the board or mention to the board our attempts to be intentional about another area, which is inter-district transfer renewals. We have 149 students attending our school district that live outside of our district's boundaries. They live in another school district's boundaries but come to San Luis Coastal. Many, in fact, most of those are inter-district transfers that we have granted over the years. They've been grandfathered and renewed year after year. Some are inter-district transfers that we have denied, and yet they've been appealed to the County Board of Education, who has the ultimate authority to overturn our denial, and those students then become members of our school district. Our work on renewing those inter-district transfer this year is kind of based on the following protocols. For those school districts that want an annual renewal from the sending district, Lucia Mar is a great example. They expect every family to come to them every year and ask once again for, can we go to San Luis Coastal? And of course, if Lucia Mar says no, we say no. They're going to stay there. Most of the school districts in our county, Atascadero, Paso Robles, Coast Union, they grant inter-district transfers forever. So once they say you can go there, no one has to go back to that district to ask for a renewal. We ask for a renewal every year. And so for all requests of renewal, we will be, after we find out whether the school districts wants that request themselves, we will be asking our current school's principal to verify that both attendance and discipline records are pretty properly maintained. That is a reason for denial that we can do, and if there is serious attendance or discipline concerns, we would expect that site principal to have a conversation with the family to discuss them and determine whether it's appropriate to remain in our district. We will grant renewals, inter-district transfer renewals, for those students to remain at their current school. So virtually, any kindergarten through fifth grade or any seventh grader, any ninth through 11th grader, we would grant those renewals as we have in the past with good attendance and discipline. So if somebody from Paso Robles in the fourth grade is attending Monarch Grove Elementary School, we're not going to arbitrarily or capriciously send them back to Paso Robles, let them stay at the school where they've been going. However, we are going to deny, as we do deny all inter-district transfers, those students going from one of our schools to a new school. So a student traveling from sixth grade to a middle school or eighth grade to the high school, and have those families go through our process, which is to come and appeal that denial and may well be granted. There may be outstanding reasons to continue the student in our school district, but just like all students who leave a school setting and go to a new setting, we want to have the ability to scrutinize those. When you think about 149 students, that's about $500,000 worth of FTE, full-time equivalents, that we're educating students that are outside of our attendance boundaries, and there's good reasons for that, but we also need to, as we'll be talking about when we get to the budget, just be a little careful about scrutinizing it. So I just wanted to share that with the board, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to attempt to address them.
Mr. Robinette, we don't recoup any money on the center district.
They're all being compensated. Those other districts are being compensated for our students that go to them, but we are not being compensated for their students that come
Correct.
To us. Thank you.
Mr. Robinette, we have this new system this year where we've been having a pre-hearing from the parents of students who want to transfer in. And how has that worked in terms of the county overturning those decisions?
We have had one situation where the county has overturned our local decision. Other than that, the county has upheld our own decisions, and we have also seen a dramatic reduction in people appealing to the county. Once we sit down and talk to them and say yes or no, if we say yes, it's easy, but if we say no, that usually kind of stops it. But we have had people go to the county after our denial and also been denied. We've had one situation that was not the case. So it's been a good process for us.
Good. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Robinette? Okay, seeing none, let's move on then to item number one, which is resolution positive certification of adequate funding, second interim financial report for 2011-2012 as of January 31st, 2012. Ms. Lang.
Thank you, and good evening. We're presenting our second interim report, which includes all the changes to the budget since the first interim report, which we reported as of October 31st, and this is as of January 31st. By approving the budget, the board certifies that the district can meet its financial obligations for the current year and two subsequent years, and also approves any budget transfers that have occurred since October 31st. You may have noticed that we've had a lot of changes to the budget since first interim, and we'll kind of go over some of those. In our revenues, we lost about $8,000 in our budget because our Title II teacher quality grant came in at about 20% less than we normally get, and that was, a permanent reduction to that funding, unfortunately. State revenues, as you know, are the trigger cuts came in this year because our revenues did not meet the expectations. So at the time that we prepared this budget, the transportation funding was going to be cut. So this is about the amount of the cut to transportation. Other local revenues, which are our revenue enhancements, went up. This includes our facility permit fees, any rentals, donations, things like that. So our total overall increase to our revenues was about $80,000. And as you can see, our expenditures had a significantly greater change. Certificated salaries went up by a little over $2 million. That includes the 3.6% salary increase for teachers. It also includes the 3%, assuming that the evaluation committee will reach an agreement on the new teacher evaluation. Classified salaries went up by the 5% salary increase. And, of course, whenever salaries go up, employee benefits also go up, or a percentage of the salaries. Our books and supplies went up. We have all our site budgets at 100% now. We have the other local revenues, which most of that gets budgeted in the 4,000 codes, which is books and supplies, so that's why that went up. In the services and other operating expenses, we went through very carefully and looked at each budget item and tried to reduce budgets where we could. We looked at places where maybe we had budgeted something that we weren't going to end up spending this year. We may have to postpone some things till next year. And we reduced as we could. So that's what that negative $92,000 is. And then our capital outlay went up a little bit based on some equipment that we bought. So overall, our total expenditure increase was $3.5 million, which affected our ending fund balance. Our beginning fund balance was $25,826,000. Add to that our second interim revenues and transfers in of $71 million, and then subtract out the second interim expenses at $79,896,000, and we come up with a structural deficit of about $8.5 million, which decreased our fund balance to $17,269,000. Now, as you know, we have things that we are required to set aside and things that we choose to set aside out of that $17 million. Revolving cash in stores are non-spendable items. We have to take those out. Our 10% for economic uncertainty is based on our expenditure budget. So as that goes up, so does the 10% for economic uncertainty. So that's almost $8 million now. Restricted ending balances, those are the balances we keep in Medi-Cal and lottery because we spend those a year after we get them. So that's the $207,000. And then all these under that are considered the federal jobs bill money. We're not going to be getting that next year, so that's going to be quite a big reduction in our federal revenues. We know we're going to have step and column increases. We know we're going to have a 2% increase to our classified salaries. We're going to have some savings due to the retirements that's built into this, and savings from extra duty time that is now built into their salaries. And we're going to have some additional expenses in our benefits due to the increased health and welfare benefits for the retirees and also the payment of the retirement incentive program. And almost everything else in here is really the unknowns. We don't know really what our property taxes are going to do. We're hoping that they'll go up over the years. State revenues, as Dr. Prater said before, we really don't know whether they're going to remain consistent, if we'll have a hold harmless, if the weighted student formula comes in, or if we're going to have trigger cuts. At the time we put this together, we took out the amount for transportation for next year, which is what we thought was going to happen. We have enough in our other designations to cover the trigger cuts in case that does happen next year. What we do know is that we're going to have to be very careful when we develop our budget for next year. We're starting to meet with our budget committee and discuss our budget for next year. We're going to have to budget much more accurately while maintaining our commitment to our quality education program. And Rick Robinette, of course, is going to go over the budget committee and budget development process a little bit later in the meeting. And with that, I'd open it up to questions or comments. Or
is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Are there any board member comments or questions for Mrs. Lang? Mr. Buckman, no?
Mrs. Lang, Fund 20, no change, no change. These are the post-retirement benefits that we've been funding?
Right.
At what percentage are we funded now? Do you happen to know offhand?
I think the last time we had the actuarial full funding would be at about $13 million, and we're at about a little over $10 million now, $10.6 million, I think.
So we're maybe 80% funded, 75% funded on that.
Probably.
And how long do we have to fully fund it?
Well, that's a good question. Next year, built into the multi-year projections, this the other transfers in here, you can see it increased from $300,000 to $1,064,000. That is a transfer from Fund 20 to cover the additional cost of the retiree benefits. So actually, instead of getting closer to funding it, we're going to start pulling
some
from it.
We're pulling back a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Actually, on the Fund 20, as I was talking to Mr. Miller today, I asked the question, and this appears to be the pension area where so many of the communities and so many of the school districts and so many of the cities around the state are sort of floundering with, and I guess it's just to pay the you guys a major compliment for keeping us out of that problem.
Well, and you.
Yes, I guess. But tremendous help by you guys, because this could really be a major stumbling block to us. And
I agree.
You guys have done a great job keeping us on track.
Thank you.
My other question was, if we went to page 1.2, and we looked at the decrease to reserve, one of the things that caught my eye was the energy rebate. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, we lost some money for solar, and I was kind of deal with that. Can you tell us about the energy rebate?
Sure. This is a program where we fund the schools based on their energy savings. I think it goes back to maybe 04, 05. We had that baseline year, and if they can save, we do a calculation, and we actually give them incentive money to save on energy, and that's what this is. So this is just budgeting at the schools for their energy rebate savings.
So this becomes a major congratulations to the school sites because energy costs are going up.
Yep.
And again, I think this kind of incentive that we're offering the schools has just really helped.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
That's fine.
And just so that I understand, when we rebate back to the schools, we had a baseline. If they use fewer units, if they're conservative, we rebate back, even though the cost of energy has gone up, obviously, since 2004.
Right.
So we're not penalizing them for the additional cost of
No, it's an incentive program. So, yeah, if they go over, they just don't get anything.
But if they cut the units they use, they realize
11, 12.
There's been a motion by Mrs. Shepherd.
And I'll second.
A second by Mrs. Roger. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, Mrs. Holmes, I believe this is a roll call.
Mrs. Shepherd?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Quessenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenbrath Rogers. Passes 6-0.
Let's move on to item number 2, week of the school administrator, Mr. Pinkerton.
Thank you very much. In cooperation with the state legislature as well as the California Department of Education, we are happy to celebrate Week of the Administrator, which is duly put down as March 4th through the 10th. And so tonight I basically am bringing forward a resolution for the board to basically honor our superintendent, our assistant superintendents, our directors that are here, our assistant director, our principals, assistant principals, deans, as well as other supervisors with the district. When I went through the resolution itself, a couple of key points that kind of stood out to me, and every time I watch Amy and Rita and the group and Jackie come up and give their presentations, just how much and how tied in the whole aspect of being a lifelong learner is. And so when you become an administrator, the learning doesn't stop. It continues and continues. And in their case, when I think of Amy and Rita and Jackie and all the directors and all that they've been doing, the word passionate in front of that definitely ties into each of them. Our key and why we're here is student success. And so I would say that every administrator in our district, and I, you know, as I've come into San Luis Coast in my first year here, I've been excited to just be involved with the administration that we have and how great our principals are and how all of us are focused on student success. Being a principal myself, you know, my first time in terms of being in the district office this year, but I do realize that in particularly the job of a school site principal is really, really tough. In this day and age, with everything that's being asked on schools, and it really that whole aspect of running a community. Each and every one of our schools is a separate community. And so the, you know, if you're the principal at Del Mar or the principal at San Luis High, you're like the mayor of those schools. And so in governance and those things that go into it. And so it really is a big, big job to be a school principal these days. And definitely the last line and kind of there at the end, that great schools are run by great principals. And great districts are run by great superintendents who have built a team around them to basically focus on that student success. And so I would say at San Luis Coastal, we're definitely there. We have a great team. And so for us to bring this resolution for the board to recognize all of our administrators, I'm happy to do so. Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I. There's no way I can match the passion. And it's just, I can't disagree with it. And not to detract from the excitement of this, but for so many years and across this country and across this state, people love to attack administrators for administrative top-heavy or administrative top-heavy. And I think it's important for people to understand that the state of California has fewer administrators per student than any other state in the United States. And so we're doing this great job with less people. And I just think it's a tremendous compliment.
Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, I'd like to echo what Mr. Buckman said. I, for many years, it felt as though administrator was a dirty word. And when you said you were an administrator, people thought, you're dead weight. But it's not a dirty word. And I'm really proud of our administrators. And I and I'm glad to bring it right out there in front. They put ADM after their name and hoping that people will think they're admirals. But they are school administrators and should be honored. And so if my colleagues don't have anything further to say, I'll move this resolution.
And I'll second it.
It's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mr. Quesenberry to approve Resolution 171112. Is there any further discussion from board members? And seeing none, Mrs. Holmes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Quesenberry?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yep.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes 6-0.
Let's move on to item number 3, 2012-2013 budget development, review process, and receive input. Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. So it's almost baseball season, and which is my favorite time of year, and brings back memories of when I was a youth playing baseball. It might be hard to believe looking at me now, but I was always the fastest guy on the team. I could steal bases like no one. For purposes is to certify kind of where we are at a point in time that we have to do after the January, and also to form the basis for some multi-year projections, which are very difficult to do because you have to do all kinds of assumptions and you're kind of making it up as you go. But we also know that it's a snapshot that is conceptual and useful for developing the next year's budget. It's the best thing we have right now to kind of figure out what do we need to do next year. And we know that in the second interim report that there will be money, as Julie said, that drops to the bottom, that kind of changes those bottom figures. We know that there are encumbered expenses that don't get expended. We know that there's even some assumptions that may or may not transpire, but as I looked at that, and as I look at it, I see $8.5 million structural deficit. That's not a good thing. That's not a healthy place to be. If we were looking at our household budget and we saw a structural deficit and how much we're bringing in compared to how much we're spending, we have some choices we have to make. And those choices often are, well, we have to go into savings. We have to go into our reserves to kind of cover it. Not always a wise choice. We need to figure out how to make more money, you know, go get a second job, figure out a way to balance that, but difficult to do and in these times. And so in our household budgets, we cut expenses. We figure out what we need to do to make cuts. And I think that's what we're going into in this next phase over this next year. We need to prepare for some budget cuts. Looking at a structural deficit like that, it's not as if we have to cut $8.5 million overnight. That would be extremely painful, with 85% or 86% actually in our school district's expenditures being spent on personnel. You can imagine where that money would go if we started trying to take care of that much money. But we over the course of the next 3 months and adopting by June, if not before, will be coming to the board several meetings working on some proposals for next year's budget, which could include some additions here and there, but more than likely will include some recommendations for expenditure cuts. You can see if you look at that timeline, I'm not going to go through all that, but at the very top, sort of in the middle, you see March 6th, the 3-6 meeting, and that's where we are tonight to just kind of give you an update about some conceptual things we're looking at and identifying kind of some targets. And the targets are, you know, moving targets. And the board, those of you who have been members for a while, you know that we kind of, you know, hope for the best, plan for the worst, or something like that. And we try to put things in tiers so that we can kind of cut as deep as we need to, but add things back if we can. So so what I'd like to do is switch gears from a baseball analogy to go to a different analogy, and that is that, do I have the little clicker? Is it on? Challenged here. Okay, that little card playing analogy here, that we need to play the hand we are dealt. And I want to be careful here, because I know some of you know that I play poker now and then, and I'm not suggesting that kind of a card game. We are not suggesting gambling with the district's budgets. I think the only gamblers with the district's budgets are at the state level, and I think the state for a while has been gambling with public education. But think in terms of, you know, a friendly game of gin rummy or pinochle or hearts or something. And you know, when you get a when you're playing a card game, you get dealt cards, and they are what they are, and you need to figure out how to best play your hand, knowing that there are some good things there and some bad things there, and try to develop a winning strategy. And so if you look at the hand that we're dealt, if you will, we know that we are a community-funded district. That's a good thing. That means that we actually get more revenue than our neighbors. We get the benefit of having a revenue limit at a certain point and a basic aid limit that gives us money above that. It's good cards in our hand. We know that we have healthy reserves. And reserves are an interesting thing in a basic aid district, a community-funded district, because the recommendation, of course, for a district like ours is to have healthy reserves, healthier reserves than those around us because of the unpredictable nature of being a community-funded district. This board has adopted a 10% reserve for economic uncertainty, and which is higher than most. And yet we have reserves above that because it is recommended by organizations like Schools for Sound Finance that we increase that to the extent we can because of always that danger of losing that community-funded basis. And we're seeing that now, that there's always those ripples that are out there. Not that there's any direct threat, but even the idea of losing $370 per ADA and having that hit our categoricals is a significant event for our district. We have a strategic... I'm sorry.
If I may, if we were to, just so that we can get a sense of it, our revenue limit was established...
...cords in anything we're trying to do. We gave a significant raise to all of our employee groups, and it's something that we should applaud. I think it's giving great morale in our district. I think it was a time to do that. But as you saw in the second interim, it's about a $3 million cost. So it is part of the hand we're playing, the fact that we have that. We have this structural deficit that we need to address, and we also have the specter of fiscal uncertainty with not only the weighted student average issue, but the whether this ballot initiative or other ballot initiatives are going to pass or not, and what that kind of trigger effect will be for the school district. So, what are the rules of the game? Well, some of the rules that I think we want to adopt as part of our budget process, and we'll want your input on this, is to keep our positive momentum going, is not to lose track of our student initiatives for student success, not to lose track of some of the great things we're doing, like we heard about with our math program, and keep that momentum going as we're trying to make some cuts. We need to be committed to being fiscally conservative in this district. It's served us well over the years, and there's no reason to deviate from that. We should make some cuts. One of the values of this board over the last few years, and it's one I admire, is the idea of preserving employment. This is not a healthy time to create more unemployment in our community. And so to the degree possible, one of the rules we'd like to play by is not doing layoffs and not losing employees that we value. But again, we need to address that structural deficit. Let's see, am I doing that right? So what's our strategy? Well, strategy, let's continue our strategic goals. And one idea is to take advantage of retirements. We had 39 certificated teachers and other certificated employees retire. We had several administrators retire. We have a handful of classified employees retire. And so one strategy is to take advantage of those retirements in the form of not necessarily replacing some of those positions or moving positions around in such a way that we are not losing employment but maximizing that. We need to continue to maximize our revenue enhancements in this district. We're doing very well with our lease agreements on our closed school sites, but the board's also engaged in several projects, our solar project, our Avila project, Johnson Avenue, the money we get from mandated costs, the money we get from our mob billing, and we need to continue to look at those things to maximize revenue enhancements and look for others. The direction I believe we've received is to structure tiers in such a way as part of our strategy so that, you know, if we give the board, you know, $500,000 chunks or $300,000 chunks, I make the number up and say, here's our thinking for, you know, the first $500,000 or the second $500,000. And that way the board has the ability to say, no, I think we should move that idea up here and move it around. And it also gives us an order to not only make cuts but to bring back programs if things transpire in a positive way. We want this process to be collaborative, and so our budget project team, which we met last week, will be meeting again tomorrow, is made up of bargaining unit members, community members. We want this to be a collaborative process. And in a sense, we want to have, you know, we want to show our hand. I mean, we want to communicate our ideas broadly throughout the organization as we're strategizing. So what are some possibilities? Oh, see, I'm going backwards. There we go. Well, one that instantly comes to mind when you start talking about taking advantage of retirements is student-teacher ratios, and that's one that is realistic. We need to look at that. Student-teacher ratios could correspond to class size and class size raises, but it could also correspond to how we use our certificated staff. We have teachers on special assignment at sites. We have teachers on special assignment at the district. We have specialists in various areas. So student-teacher ratios is certainly one of the possibilities we need to look at and how we structure things in order to maximize those ratios. We have administrator and classified reductions. Again, taking advantage of retirements, are there any things we can do within those realms without cutting people or laying off individuals? We want to look at retirements as opposed to layoff in all areas. We're pretty much past the date for layoffs for certificated employees. I mean, it's March 15th, and obviously we're not geared up for that. But classified layoffs, administrative layoffs, there's still some time for that stuff, but that's not a possibility we're really looking to entertain. We need to continue looking at program efficiency. So this could be looking at some of our strategic initiatives that we're funding. Are there different ways of funding those things? Are there more cost-effective efficiencies in terms of professional development or in terms of conferences? Are there things that we can kind of squeeze to find some dollars? And then also using the retirement, are we on the right track in terms of our strategy and our plan and what's valuable? And also, are there any sacred cows? Are there any things that you, as a board, say, yeah, you can look at a lot of stuff, but don't touch this, or this is an area where if you bring back that recommendation, we're not going to like it, because that would be helpful for us to know those things. And with that, I'll entertain those questions and entertain any questions you have also.
Well, first I'm going to take it to the public to see if there's anyone from the public who would like to address the board on this item. And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for board comment.
I would just like to state that I have a strong preference for keeping cuts away from the classroom to the extent possible, and that would include the student-teacher ratio. So I would put that at the bottom of your list of possibilities as opposed to at the top of the list of possibilities. My preference.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Are we anticipating that some of the TOSAs that are at the sites will be going back into the classroom, or is that decided yet?
It's all fair game right now. We haven't made any recommendations. There hasn't been any recommendations coming forward. That's certainly something that we can look at as a possibility.
Yeah.
We actually have, if you look at our 9 elementary schools and we put one teacher on special assignment at Laguna Middle School, there's 10 FTE within that area, and those are all supporting our strategic initiatives, so it's one of those things that we need to kind of balance.
Okay. Thank you.
Mrs. Sheffer?
This is kind of vague, and it would, of course, depend on when we start receiving actual numbers, but I have a strong desire to maintain our momentum with the initiatives and not put the initiatives at risk in any fashion.
Marilyn?
Yeah, Mr. Robinette, we have at least in the past, we've had a sinking fund for technology,
mm-hmm.
a replacement cycle for
mm-hmm.
technology.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that we could forego for a year or two based on what we've spent, mm-hmm. I guess, through 10-12?
Certainly a possibility. We actually had in the budget this year not only It's close to $500,000 of a sinking fund for technology replacement. We also had budgeted money for infrastructure, anticipating the need for Wi-Fi throughout our system. So that's to the tune of about $800,000. So those are two areas that we can look at certainly as part of this whole budget process for next year, because at least the sinking fund, as you call it, is an ongoing expense. It's not a one-time expense. So there's $500,000 there that, you know, we could choose to cut or eliminate.
We've been in a replacement mode for some years now. So are we in fairly good shape?
Yeah, you'd have to ask the expert Russell about that. We have not been on a replacement fund every year. We have actually suspended that in some years. So even though we put that in the budget, there have been many times where we said, okay, this is not an area where we should spend all of that. So I don't think so. I don't think we have spent that every year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have that, and then what was the other thing I was thinking of? Technology. Oh, adoptions. Do we foresee any adoptions for next year, the year after?
I don't think so. Mm-mm. I think it's 14-15 is the next one. Yeah.
So we're in good shape for curricular materials?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have any sacred cows. I'm willing to look at anything that that the team brings forward. There may be some things that I disagree with, but I am willing to look at anything that's presented to me.
Mark?
Thank you. First of all, I just compliment on the schedule and the schedule that I've seen. There's really good participation, it seems, across the board. We've got parents, we've got DLACs, we've got all the different staff involved. So I'd like to thank you for that. Second of all, we're looking for sacred cows not to cut, and I'd like to throw one out that I'd like to somehow have us look at revenue enhancements, mm-hmm. and that maybe places such as in adult ed and the courses that we choose to offer, and what are the needs within the community, especially in these economic times. And, I look at this room, and I think this would be a great place for a wedding. And are there ways for us to promote our facilities beyond
in the past, but I'd like to see, again, that coupled with the instructional implications. I think one of the best things that we did when we went through this before, and Mrs. Holmes will remember that, when we actually had the spreadsheet up there and we were able to manipulate the different cuts to come up with the targeted figures that we needed, and again thinking about what that would look like for our program. So that's my feedback, and I wish you good luck. Is there any other comments from board members? Mrs. Rogers.
Yeah, I just would like to correct what might be a misconception based on what I said. I don't have any sacred cows. I'm willing to look at whatever the group has. My assumption is that the initiatives will go forward because we made a 5-year commitment to them. So by saying that, I don't want to appear not to be standing four square behind the initiatives. And I would also ask Mr. Robinette, what does he think that the eBay value is of all those bases in his garage? Because we may be needing it.
Very good.
Okay, great. Thank you. Do you have the feedback that you need?
I do. Thank you very much.
Super. And so it looks like we'll be this. We have what, Dr. Prater, at least 4 more opportunities as things become honed to make comments and to finalize our budget?
That's correct. We'll keep you posted every meeting that we have through June.
Okay. Let's go down then to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like to have an item pulled. Item number 4, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 5, acceptance of donations. Number 6, disposition of surplus property. 7, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 8, approval of purchase orders. 9, approval of warrants and payroll. Whoa. And 10, the sound system. No.
I think that's the one we should do.
10, the action on the claim against the district, Jesse Brasul, the 3rd on behalf of Jesse Brasul, the 4th a minor. And I'm going to ask that one be pulled. So is there any discussion from the public on these items? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion, please?
I'll move approval of action consent items 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Okay. And I'll second.
And there's been a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers for items 4 through 9. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. I pulled item number 10 only for the purposes of explaining what the recommendation would be, and that is that we typically are asked to reject claims so that they may be forwarded to our insurance company for settlement purposes or for investigation of settlement purposes. Given that, unless there's further discussion on that item, I'm going to move approval of item number 10. It's been moved by me and seconded by Mr. Quesenberry for item number 10. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 12, which is advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to have anything in advanced agenda? Mr. Quisenberry.
Mine's just a clarification. We are going to be looking at cell phone use and various other things as well.
We have one more reading at our principal's meeting on Tuesday the 13th, and so I think all things go, we should have that on the board agenda on the 20th of March, our new revised cell phone policy, and probably, I'm guessing, our acceptable use policy, because there's kind of some carryover which has to do with technology use overall for students. So,
okay. Let's move on to item number 13, which is reports by board members. Does anybody have a report they'd like to make? Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and I had the opportunity to interview students for the Laguna Middle School leadership class. And is that? No, wait a minute. Ryan Pinkerton, I'm sorry, was there. I'm sorry. I just imagined that you were there. I don't know. Anyway,
it's the pressures of grandfatherhood.
Yeah, it must be. At any rate, it was a wonderful experience. The process was to determine a certain number of students, I think around 30, to be members of the ASB leadership program there, and they had some almost 50 students or more than 50 students that were interviewed. I unfortunately couldn't stay for all of them, but the two-thirds that we went through that morning, I couldn't have been more impressed.
Presenter with three sets of kids, so you spend half the day. And it gives the kids a really good opportunity to find out about your career and really dig deep. And then I got the opportunity to share the room with Luis Ortega. So how fun to be played to and sung to all morning. So that was a great day.
Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I'd like to take the opportunity to thank Rachel Bourbier, who's with Friday Night Live, and also the administration at Los Osos Middle School. There's a group called the Estero Bay Youth Coalition, and it's run by the kids. They come up with their own ideas. This year, the effort that they're going to be putting in is to do a fun day, and it will be at Los Osos Middle School for those children that they're home for the spring break. It will be open to third to sixth graders with junior high and high school kids acting as chaperones and counselors. And a lot of work's gone into this, and I'm hoping everybody get a chance to come by. It's the Friday of spring break.
Okay. Which Friday?
You know, I haven't gone through the whole math.
Anybody else? Mrs. Roger.
I just have a little one. I missed the Pacheco open house because I spaced it out. And I'm very sorry that I missed it, but I was there the next day. And I took a look at the classroom. And it is an awesome setup. It's just really phenomenal. And what struck me was that it's set up so like a kindergarten classroom that the transition for those preschoolers into kindergarten, it will feel very familiar to them as they move into the classroom, the physical layout and the way things are placed on the walls and what have you. So I just really, I think that we did a great job on it. I don't take any personal credit for setting it up, but I think it's wonderful, so I would extend credit to the people who were involved in it. And while I was there, I had the opportunity to observe children exiting school at the end of the school day in the rain, which is, I think, probably about as bad as it gets, because you have more parents picking up in the rain than you do when it's not raining. And I know that there's been some discussion with the neighbors about the congestion and various other issues related to the pickup and drop-off at Pacheco, and I would have to say that, just based on my own observation, that I don't think that it is any... I didn't witness anything more problematic than I've seen at any of the other schools at the pickup and drop-off time. So I was glad that I was able to get a visual on it and a good, I think, a good sense of what's going on at the end of the school day there. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
The only thing I would add about the Pacheco opening of the preschool that was so fun to see was how it is indeed a community school. A Cal Poly fraternity participated to a great extent, and several young men attended the opening to witness their work in progress, to see how their work coming to fruition with the children there. As Catherine mentioned, the number of donations made by families at Pacheco who did not have children attending the preschool but realized the value of the program and in support of their school campus, it was really quite heartwarming and wonderful to see the outpouring of affection and warmth and good wishes for that new program.
Great. And I was able to go to the Monarch Grove Exploratorium a couple of Saturdays ago, and it was really exciting to see lots of members of the Monarch Grove community participate there, and members of the community actually, in general, presenting different things, different science experiments, different arts and crafts experiments, things like that. I had an opportunity to talk to Sunshine Frawley, who's our transitional kindergarten teacher out there, and we had a really nice chat about transitional kindergarten and just the importance of transitional kindergarten, and I'm so glad that we're able to fund transitional kindergarten, and when I know that the pressure's on for a lot of districts not to do it, which is really going to hurt kids. And then Sunshine sent me a transitional kindergarten website link that we have for the district. It's got great pictures of the kids. It's chronological, so we get to see how the kids are actually progressing. She talked about starting to work a little bit with the special education teachers, because they're starting to identify some of the special ed kids there as well, and kids that are going to
see. And good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.